Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. I'm your host, Stephanie Sison. Happy holidays to all of our listeners. Today is December 25th, 2019. The mountains of Colorado are chilly here as we celebrate the darkest nights of the year. But today's guest is enjoying a completely different climate zone. Tara Rodriguez Bezosa is calling in from tropical, beautiful island of Puerto Rico. Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show, Tara.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I will definitely be enjoying the sun for all of you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. So Tara is an organizer and entrepreneur who co-founded El Departamento de la Comida, which is a nonprofit, non-government collective for the advancement of sustainable, resilient, and regenerative food projects in Puerto Rico. I met Tara during my recent trip to the island. I attended a dinner where I was delighted by the most delicious locally sourced organic meal and had the pleasure of listening to her speak about the local food scene in Puerto Rico. Inspired to hear more, I asked her if she would join us today and talk with our listeners and with me a little bit more about the agriculture scene in Puerto Rico and her work there. So to get us started, Tara, can you give our listeners a little bit of background on the work that you do in Puerto Rico?
Well, as you may or may not know, Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. And it's very important to begin there because a lot of the work that we do around food is very much linked to being limited in many ways as to, I guess, just all sorts of autonomous systems. We are importing up to 95% of all of our food. And most of the agriculture that historically has been promoted or even subsidized here is not to feed the population of Puerto Rico, but is more industrial, conventional agriculture, markets for exportation, GMO seeds, stuff like that, biotechnology. So I think Puerto Rico is just one of those places that, as many, farmers involved in permaculture and sustainability and agroecology come to know, is the perfect place to practice food sovereignty, where you understand that your food is related to pretty much everything else in your life. I am actually from Santurce, which is a neighborhood in the San Juan area of Puerto Rico, the capital, the city. But I recently just moved 2 years ago to a farm about 45 minutes south. And I started getting involved in food when I was about 24 years old, just really because the food at the supermarket was pretty bad quality. And none of it was local. So I guess it's been a while ever since. It's been a long journey so far, a little more than 10, almost 15 years. And we do a little bit of everything. I am a mixture of a beginner farmer. I also travel around the world sharing a lot around food sovereignty in Puerto Rico and also our project, El Departamento de la Comida, which in itself was, creating an alternative to just the existing, federal agencies here on the island to kind of support more the real work that needs to be done on farms. And I work a lot with seeds and seed sovereignty specifically. So I don't know. I guess I'm like your all over the place person when it comes to food and farming.
Well, that's permaculture, right? We all have lots of eggs in our basket from different things. And you were just recently at a seed training on the mainland. How did you find that? That was just when I met you. You were getting ready to go. Was that a fun experience for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, we went to Durham, North Carolina, because ironically, that's where the closest seed workshop, you know, the closest seed conference was, and we technically fall into the southeast region of the U.S., even though we actually have more related to Hawaii than than we do to Florida. It was great. You know, for us, this past year, we've been dedicating a lot of our time, energy, and effort to seed sovereignty specifically, because we realize that, you know, Puerto Rico, I think, is about the third largest GMO seed producer for the state.
Wow.
And we have been, you know, recovering these past 2 years from Hurricane Maria. But since before then, our genetic diversity in terms of our food crops, you know, had just been on a constant decrease. And there's no food sovereignty without seed sovereignty.
Absolutely.
And we definitely believe that also seeds should be, you know, kept and controlled by the communities that grow them and the communities that use them. So we've been doing a lot of seed exchanges in Puerto Rico and in other places like New York City, New Mexico, wherever we get invited, always obviously in conjunction with local efforts because I can't go to New Mexico, the cradle of many, many seeds, and, you know, pretend to know what's going on over there. But it's been really, really beautiful for us. Seeds are our ancestors. And so we have, you know, a main goal to protect and honor our ancestors. And seeds, you know, without the seeds, we wouldn't have any of the crops and we wouldn't have a lot of our own cultural identity in Puerto Rico. So this is something that this year, 2019, you know, we've been putting a lot into. And it's been a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful year evolving that.
I was reading a bit on your website and looking at the four interconnected divisions that you that the Departamento de la Comida has, and the resource library being really interesting and very similar. We here in Basalt, Colorado, which is the town right next to where I am, just down the road, we started a seed library at the library maybe 6 or 7 years ago, so people can check out garden seeds and learn how to plant them and do things like that, and then return the seeds that they've saved for other people to utilize. So we've been some bumps along the way, but working with that program for a while, as well as last year we just started a tool library, and I was noticing that was on your site as well. So Pitkin County helped to fund the beginning of a tool library. So there's these farm implements that farmers can rent out and utilize when they need them, but not have to own them individually, which is a huge cost savings to our young and beginning and smaller farmers.
Yeah, totally. I think what happened to us was I owned a restaurant right when Hurricane Maria hit and lost it. Kind of a blessing in disguise. 2 years, saying that 2 years after. not immediately after. But we started going around the island and, you know, El Departamento's collective and a lot of other groups as well, and organizations, a lot of volunteers and farmers from, you know, all over the world actually came down to Puerto Rico to see how they could support farm workers down here and, you know, farmers in general, because there's a really beautiful network of sustainable farms down here. And one of the things that we realized was that, you know, farmers were just a little bit held back when it came to receiving groups. And it was mostly because groups didn't come with all the, you know, the gear necessary to do efficient farm work.
Right.
And when you would get to a farm, you had 10 volunteers, but maybe only 2 machetes. And we started realizing that a lot of farms were not only missing smaller tools and quantities for groups to come, you know, and volunteer in a farm, but also larger equipment, which is still really small. I'm talking, you know, tiny farms. Here a farm is, you know, 5 to 15 acres on average. And so we started identifying that there were, like, everything from, you know, a walk-behind tractor, it costs like $5,000 to $6,000, mm-hmm. and hardly any farmer can afford that, but it does a lot of really efficient work, which is also very needed. And so after kind of going around the island and helping out, we identified that seeds, tools, and of course books, mm-hmm. And educational materials and oral histories were these tools that could be shared, and we're just like not here. They weren't available. There are hardly any libraries in Puerto Rico in general. Imagine if you wanted to look for a composting book,
right.
or a book about, you know, what we call permaculture is really indigenous practices combined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't really find that anywhere. And so we decided that even though we couldn't continue to, you know, keep traveling from farm to farm for more than the year and change that we did, we wanted to establish a library that had three collections, one being educational materials like books and oral histories, the other being a seed library, the other being a tool library, and in the seed library being very specific that this is not necessarily just for hobbyists or anything like that, but these are specific seeds and their stories that we are filling in the library from different farmers that we're visiting and in relationship with, bringing those seeds into the library and bringing the stories of those seeds into the library with them.
Beautiful.
So when you come and you take out seeds from the library, you're learning a piece of your own history. You know, and that's something really important for us, like beyond seed planting, this is part of our fight for any kind of autonomy and sovereignty that we could look for, you know, on our archipelago of islands. So it's been really, really beautiful. And the combination of having seeds, tools, and educational materials all in one place for, you know, existing farmers, new farmers, young farmers, people that don't know that they're farmers yet, you know, just anybody that's really interested in food, where it comes from, you know, comes from, and just the ecosystems that it forms a part of. It's been a great, great shared resource and something that we're trying to get to a perfection. We'll be opening up membership this year, 2020, for the first time. And hopefully, you know, other regions around Puerto Rico will want to replicate this type of a shared tool library.
And for this library, or for any other way that if a listener is already feeling inspired and they would like to help or donate tools or seeds or education materials or funding for those things, what would be the best way for them to link up with you?
Yeah, so we're pretty well known. I mean, if you Google El Departamento de la Comida, a.k.a. the Department of Food, you'll find hundreds of articles. You could go on our website, which is eldepartamentodelacomida.org. We're on Instagram, which is El Departamento de la Food, as in F-U-D. F-O-O-D, because comida didn't fit. And, yeah, people find us everywhere. We are, you know, specifically if you are in some sort of relationship with Puerto Rico or come down or anything like that, please write us. In terms of donations of seeds, we're more interested in focusing on local heirloom seeds than getting seeds too much from outside.
Right.
But definitely a lot of people help us through funding. We have a Patreon page that pretty much, you know, that little amount from Patreon is what we split between those of us who work the collective. So you can find El Departamento de la Comida on Patreon. And a lot of people just in solidarity from wherever they are, just getting in touch with us. And I think just, you know, expanding these networks that are already existing, you know, around the world has been something that has proven to be very, very, very fruitful. I mean, everywhere we go, somebody knows of El Departamento. We've been given, you know, housing. We've been invited to conferences. You name it. There's different ways that don't just mean, you know, sending stuff over here, but a lot of times it's also getting us in the right spaces as well.
Excellent. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your farm, and certainly, as all of our listeners are abundantly aware of, I have a obsession with medicinal herbs and healing botanicals, being an herb farmer myself, and always just being down in Puerto Rico, walking around and seeing the passion fruit, just like eating everything, was so overwhelmingly beautiful. The kind of the struggle we have to, or the purposeful action we have to take to get passion fruit to grow around here in a greenhouse, is well worth it. But seeing it just everywhere, it was so beautiful to witness. But what are some of the medicinal herbs in that grow well in Puerto Rico, or that you're particularly fond of?
Yeah, well, it's funny that you say passion fruit, because I actually just made myself some passion fruit juice for this call. So I'm having that as we speak.
Yummy.
And I'm standing in front of my passion fruit, which is starting to take over my bottom floor of the house. I am looking, you know, I'm at my farm right now, and I see Margarita Silvestre, which I don't know what it's called, but it's a medicinal plant here. I'm seeing Jamaica, which is hibiscus. I'm seeing a guava tree. I'm seeing pigeon peas. I'm seeing the passion fruit. I'm seeing ginger, turmeric, tarragon. I have some comfrey that is growing in front of me. Mm-hmm. I mean, for us, everything just has different qualities that are, you know, some fruit like the guanabana or soursop tree that's in front of me. Not only is the fruit amazing, but the leaves are medicinal. I just feel that everywhere I walk in Puerto Rico, you know, the more you get involved and the more you learn, the more you're, you know, revolving or just surrounded by medicine, which is really beautiful. And specifically when you get to hear elders, you know, speak about how they used it, I think that that's one of the things that fascinates me about living on this island is I didn't grow up knowing anything about medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't grow up knowing that much about my own history. And so as an adult and being involved in food and farming, I've also been learning so much about who I am as a Puerto Rican queer woman, because every time I learn about a plant, I'm learning a piece of my history. Mm. I'm learning about sugarcane, and I'm, you know, learning about the duca plant and where I'm at. You know, I moved to this farm because this is a small community that has always been agricultural. It's a small rural community, and everybody here knows, you know, the 4 to 5 different uses for each plant, which is really, really beautiful. I know where our maraca instruments come from, you know, and it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but in Puerto Rico, everything is kind of connected to everything. So our food and our medicine are almost the same. And it's very interesting to enter into a zone where it's hard for me to know the difference between my food and my medicine.
Which is the way it should be.
That's a good sign.
It's a very good sign. Do you feel like that is common in the people of Puerto Rico? It seems like here on the mainland, in lots of areas, maybe someone's grandma or great-grandma potentially, you know, knew these new plants to help their family with the common cold or an upset belly. But for a couple generations now, until maybe more recently, that had been going away. And so I, of course, didn't grow up either around medicinal herbs or anything like that and came to it later. But there's no one alive in my family even that had any touch to that kind of lifestyle. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, is that more and still ingrained into the people? Has it been completely kind of lost and then it's coming back, or kind of always been there?
You know, we have a saying in Spanish that says, yerba mala nunca muere, which kind of roughly translates into, you know, that tough weed, that tough grass never dies. And it's a saying of resilience. It's, you know, it's hard to say that you will ever be able to eliminate something like, you know, plant medicine. Mm-hmm. Even though in the case of Puerto Rico, you know, for many generations, it was seen as just not civilized. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that was coming in from a ship. And that has a lot to do with us being a colony of Spain and then of the U.S. now. You know, it has been ingrained into our society, and it was told to our grandmothers and great-grandmothers that plant medicine was just not, you know, that was a poor person's thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely did not grow up with parents that were taught either about plant medicine, and their parents were probably the last ones, right? Very similar to what you said. But there is a strong movement here of people my age. I mean, I'm 36. I know people in their 20s, and I know people, you know, of all ages, right, that are continuing plant medicine tradition and also learning about, oh, well, these are, for example, Chinese medicinal herbs. What are the equivalent of these in Puerto Rico?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of plants that are native to here that have very similar qualities to plants, obviously, from other regions as well,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting. So it is definitely not lost, although, you know, Puerto Rico has been known to be the place where pretty bad stuff has been experimented, like Agent Orange, of course, biotechnology right now, a lot of stuff related to women's reproductive systems, you know, birth control pills, all of that. This has been that, you know, experimentation site, and also it was this place where a lot of pharmaceuticals came down.
Right.
And so plant medicine was moved aside so that pills and pharmaceuticals can come in.
There's very, so very much more money in that.
Right. And so it's, you know, I feel very lucky that there have been specifically a lot of really resilient women on these islands that have kept the traditions alive. And it just happens to be that there's always some of us that are interested in finding out more, you know, and it continues. But our generation has definitely increased in awareness and interest, even above the generation before us, you know, awareness of the importance of medicinal and plant medicine, and especially when it comes to also having children, for example. There's a growing number of women that are learning, you know, how to be doulas and, you know, being able to do childbearing, et cetera. So it's a really great, great generation that, despite a lot of issues that are going on right now on our island, we definitely do also have a lot of strong points. And they're mostly all related to food, farming, and plants.
Perfect. That's what most of our listeners are also very committed to when it comes down to it. It's food, farming, plants, health, community. I was really just blown away by the experience down there in Puerto Rico and meeting you and hearing about your organization and the other work that's being done there. We're headed back in February for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm looking forward to digging in a little bit deeper, maybe seeing your farm, which would be really amazing for me, and some other farms that are in production or some permaculture sites or any of that and lending help if I can. And Tara, of course, we run out of time as always. These are just these short little like teaser recordings. And so I encourage our listeners to get on Google and reach out. And if you're in Puerto Rico or you're headed that way, see how you can help the local community there as well as your community at home. So Tara, I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, same. And I hope that the cold weather does all of you well.